This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Michelle Shiruti-Koa, Master of Wine. How are you, Michelle?
I'm good. Great. Thanks, Chris.
Excellent. Excellent. We're going to be talking today about judging at Decanter.
Yes.
We're at the Excel Centre, or not quite the Excel Centre, just off the Excel Centre,
right,
where the Decanter judging is going on. Now, you've just been having a little break for lunch, I think.
I have, after having, I'm trying to think how many wines, after having probably around 40.
40 wines.
40
yeah.
wines.
Yeah. Do they give you a glass of wine over lunch?
No. We like to keep our palate bit fresh, Chris, and not be diluted with other wines. So.
I know, you might be tempted to swallow as
exactly.
well. Okay. What I want to talk about is a little bit about the judging process and how the Decanter judging is set up.
Sure.
I judge at some of the other big wine competitions, but I've never judged Decanter.
Yep.
So how are the panels constructed and you know, in a big overview type point of view?
I think from a big overview, so we have obviously an array of judges internationally that come in. So obviously it's going to be based on sort of their knowledge, their specialty areas and timing when they're available to judge, as well as the entries that we'd have. So there's quite a logistical process that goes involved. So by the Decanter Awards team, when wines come in, they sort them, they flight them, and then they take a look at who are the experts that are in town. And then panels are selected that way.
Is everybody equal on a panel?
So, no, that's a really good question. So what will happen is on any given day, the panels will be three or four. There will be either a regional chair chairing that panel and tasting the wines and scoring the wines with them. There are some occasions where because of timing and logistics, we might have two panels that day. In that case, the regional chair, will oversee both of those panels. But a senior judge will sit on those panels and score with the other two judges, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So we have regular judges. We have people that may act as a senior judge if needed with the regional chair judge.
Like the IWC, they often have an associate judge who's, they're learning. They're like judges in nappies.
Yeah, no, we don't really have an associate judge, so to speak. But if we do have somebody new into the process, we'd ask them to come a little bit earlier. They'll be sitting with me or they'll be sitting with a senior judge that's with me on the panel. And we just sort of sit and go through the system with them, talk about what's going to happen with the day. We always start our days out with calibration. So let's say we have a flight of 10, first two or three wines, we'll taste, we'll stop, we'll discuss them. And particularly for a new judge, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about their scores in line with everybody else. If they're comfortable, then we'll move on. But with new judges, what we would then do is just sort of, you know, watch the process and watch their scores and coach them through the day, so to speak.
Okay. And what happens when you get disagreements? I was judging at the IWC a couple of weeks ago, and we had an incredibly reductive Australian Chardonnay. Mm. And some of the judges went, wow, this is the new style of Australian Chardonnay. And I was going, it might be the new style, but the consumer's not going to like it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you might think it's the best thing since sliced bread, but no one's going to thank you if you give it a gold medal.
I think it's a really super good question. And I think obviously when the wine world, we have people that have different styles. They like different styles. We have consumers that like different styles.
Oh, yeah.
So I think as a regional chair or a senior judge, I look at it as my role to make sure that sort of those prejudices are taken out. We understand the styles and almost to recognize award both styles. That being said, that always isn't the case. We can have really diverse opinions, as you well know. In that case, if I feel we can't come to a resolution, I'd like to think we can on the panel, but if we can't, we do have five chairs of the competition. So overall, we have five individuals that sit overall on top of all of us, so to speak. And one will be roaming the room and we will call them over and ask them for their opinion and get them. They will hear everything. As a chair, I'll do the referral. They'll hear everything. I don't tell them, you know, specifically who scored what, but I might sit there and say, you know, two people were in gold, two people weren't gold. You know, we would like you to tell us what you think. So that's generally what happens. It can get resolved very easily that way.
Yeah, yeah, as long as people don't dig their heels in, but most people don't.
They kind of don't. And I think you can really get to a point where you can come to some agreement. And I think as long as sort of I look at it as my job to sit there and say we have stylistic differences, and the consumer does, but not to overly, I think, award or knock down a wine with personal prejudices, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. And are you, do you give them like a score out of 100 and take, you know, and then categorize them into the golds and silvers? Or
yeah, we do. So we have certain bands. So if you look at let's talk with the gold. So gold is 95 and above. We have another a band that goes above that with platinum, but I'll talk about that in a minute. So let's say gold 95 and above, silver 90 to 94, and then we actually look at bronze, that's 86 to 89, and then we have commended, which is just 80 to 84. So that's how we score them. Okay, and obviously if you score 180. You know, and unless everybody does it, I'd like to know from the judge, okay, you took this out, you're not giving an award, why is that? Let's talk about it. Let's say the rest of us are. So that's kind of how we resolve it. So bronze, really good wine, very typical, traditional for what it should be, nice, juicy, you know, the type of thing that you go in somewhere, you sit there and go, yeah, it's a nice glass of wine. Okay, yeah. Don't have to think about it. Silver, looking for a little bit more, looking for a little bit complexity on it, a little bit more longevity, a little bit more fruit concentration. And as you know, golds have to almost grab you by the throat, yeah. Really. You know, they just have to have that extra something to get a gold. All of our golds do get double checked in the room by this chair that I spoke to you. So in addition to us giving it a gold on the panel, that chair in the room will double taste all of those wines just to make sure they are worthy of a gold. And those golds then go forward next week. And next week there's a group of us regional chairs along with the co-chairs. And we will then retaste all the golds. And they either stay a gold or they come down to a silver. Or if we think they're special enough, they get awarded platinum, which is 97 and above.
Okay. And I always tell listeners when they're choosing wines, because like using the awards like the Decanter and the IWC, sure. IWC, they're actually really good ways of finding pretty decent examples of wines. And I always tell listeners, ignore anything below a silver. Bronze and commended, don't worry about it. But silvers and golds and up is all good.
I think that's a really good point. And one of the things that we've done last year and we're continuing this year is we've got actually a value category. So we take a look at wines and obviously value, we had to go up a little bit because of inflation, but $14.99 and under. And if they come in at that price band, we then take a look at those and we will score them slightly differently. We're sitting there saying, as I say to my judges, I don't really look at price. I judge the wines. But if all of a sudden I have one of these wines and I'm giving it a really good silver score, and then I find out it's in the value category, I will then say to the judges, let's look at this again. Should we put this forward for a gold value? So to your point, we actually will take out those value wines. We're not looking for something that's going to last for 20 years, but we want consumers to know this is a bloody good wine for this price.
Yeah.
And you can feel comfortable and confident at that price range. So I don't know whether that works for you or not, but we actually find that it's a really good way just to sort of award those wines. As you know, it's to make a wine for that sort of price point. You know, someone's doing something pretty special if they can make a wine.
The drinks business do their masters.
Yes.
They recommended a Pinot Noir from Bulgaria. I can't remember the producer, but they recommended it. It was on special at Waitrose, like £6. And I went, okay, I'm going to get that.
Seriously,
And yeah. I just bought a case of it. And I had a first bottle the other night. And I tell you what, this is like £6 bottle of wine from Bulgaria, but it drinks like a 12, 14 pound Pinot Noir from Marlborough.
Exactly. I think it was a really good innovation that we've done in the competition to try and sort of sort those out. Because not everybody in the world is going to sit there and say, oh, I'm going to buy a 50 pound wine.
Yeah.
You know, there is a place and there is a room to sit there and to actually give a stamp of approval on what we call value wines.
Yeah.
So I actually think it's a really cool thing that they did.
Yeah, I think it's really important because I know decanter audience is quite different to your average drinker.
You know? Yeah, sure.
The decanter audience is a highly engaged audience, normally with a lot of money looking at the more premium end of the market. But everybody has a midweek wine.
Exactly. And again, you know, in that category, nobody's necessarily looking for it to last for 20 years. You just... you and I both know, you just want to come on Friday night, just have something nice to drink. You don't want to have to think about it. I don't want to have to think about this at all, whether I should age it or chill it. I just want to have a drink.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and enjoy. And I think that's what that category is about. I think sometimes in the wine world, we get really caught up in the minutia of fine wine. When all of us want to come home and relax on a Friday night, probably not have a fine wine necessarily, or not me all the time.
How do you go about dealing with a lot of wines that aren't middle quality? For example, the IWC gets a lot of wines and they spend 2 weeks judging. The first week, they just take out, they just go, it's a middle or not a middle. And half the wines, two thirds of the wines just get dumped in the first week.
Yeah, that's a good question. So what I'd say to you, we deal with that on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, that is us that doesn't get a bronze and in is out. We will actually do that every panel on a day-to-day basis. We don't kind of have a second go at it. It actually happens on the day. I'd like to think it doesn't happen that often, but gosh, it depends on your day. You know, if you have 10 wines in front of you, sadly, sometimes 3 or 4 of them may not make the cut and they may not meddle. And that's part of the wine world, you know, whether it was not a great vintage or, you know, smoke taint. I was talking to somebody about their, you know, stuff happens in the wine world. It's unfortunate that happens, but we kind of deal with that on the day in every panel.
If you're only getting like 30% failure rate, that means you're getting a lot of wines through to the middle. Like IWC is much, that first week is just hell. You know, it's just like, oh, grey rot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just maybe decanter entrance. Are they a higher, more premium wines in general?
I can't sit there and say they are, I'll be honest with you. However, I think there is an element to the person that's submitting the entry knows the readership, knows decanter. You know, so they are submitting. I'm not going to say great wines. It's not like we get top wines of the world in. They don't need to submit to any competition, but there probably is. We probably get sort of more mid-range price range. That being said, it depends on the country. And you and I both know this. Bulgaria, you know, they just have a different price bracket. So we actually do get. So it's hard to say within that section. You know, I'm regional chair for Tuscany, and when we get to basic Chiantis, we get a lot of value wines in basic Chianti. We do get it. So I think yes, overall, we probably get slightly higher priced wines, but I would also say it kind of depends on what you're judging and what their price bracket is.
What's the weirdest wine that you've ever given a gold medal to?
It's a really on the spot good question. And the reason why I'm going to say this, because I was just at Vinitaly and Decanter asked me to do a tasting there at the show. So we had about, I think 70 odd people come to my tasting and they asked me for the theme. So I ended up doing as a theme, rare Italian varieties. So varieties you may not have heard of, which were Italian, which I thought suitable for Vinitaly. I picked 10 wines, 5 white and 5 red. And I think the beautiful thing I'll say to that was they were gold and platinums. And a year later, this was based on last year's competition. And I actually told the people that managed the Decanter Wine Awards, I said, you know what? A year later, they were still gold and platinum. And there was no doubt they were still gold or platinum, which gave me great confidence in our caliber of judges. But we had some really sort of interesting, different varietals. So I can't even remember the name of them. We had 3 sort of native indigenous to Campania, a Genistra, like 3 different wines in it that was super cool and really, really rare. So, you know, Italy is a place where you find all this stuff. You find native indigenous varieties that you have never heard of. And it was a great example, even for myself, to actually pull out 10 of these and actually show Schioppettino, whoever has a Schioppettino, you know. Sagrantino, maybe a few people know that, but not very many people have a gold-winning Sagrantino. So it was a really cool way to actually sort of highlight some weird and wonderful wines. So, yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of weird and wonderful wines in my life. So, yeah. And I think we get them often in the competition. I think probably more different ones when you talk to somebody who maybe judges Turkey or the Balkans or something like that than Italy. But we still have our fair share.
Normally, as a judge, you get an information sheet about the wine. You might know its region.
Yeah.
It's alcohol, it's acidity, it's sugar levels or whatever. You get some information about the wines. Do you ever sometimes think, oh my God, we're going to be, these are all going to be a bit dodged. Do you ever feel a little bit typecast? You know, the wines get a little bit typecast?
That's a really interesting question. So we get a crib sheet. Everybody does when you walk in for the day. So we'll get either the appellation or the denomination. We ask the producers, most competitions do, I think, you know, what is the blend? 100%, and they tick it off. Obviously, what's the alcohol? We'll ask a bit about oak. Whether they fill it out is up to them. So we might, is it aged in oak? If you tick yes, how long? So we may or may not get that information. And we get alcohol, and we get a price band. That's kind of all we get. So do you prejudge it? I think you kind of sit there. The only thing I'll say to you is when it comes to Italy, and I think the same thing when you get into any other country, you get to that Vendipei or IGT or table wine category, and those come up, and you kind of go, gosh, this could be a mixed bag of anything. I could get anything here at any sort of price range or quality. And shockingly, I've had that, and I've had a couple of golds already this week with those type of wines. So you sit there and you kind of go, oh, I don't know what I'm getting. And then bloody hell, you get golds, right? So yeah. So you can, but then there's always those that will surprise you.
Michelle, you're a Central Italy, Tuscany expert.
Yep.
So you might be able to help me on this. Italy appears to be absolutely focused on ensuring their wines have high carbon footprint by ensuring that they must have these regulatory requirements of must have cork, must be in a glass bottle. You know, there's lots of rules that are stopping alternative packaging, alternative ways of minimizing the carbon footprint. Do you know why the Italians are so obsessed with trying to keep their carbon footprint so high?
Yeah, I think if you looked at any, if you looked in the EU and you looked at any of, you know, the quality wine categories, whether it's France or Italy or Spain, almost all of them will have a regulation to be packaged in the area and don't allow a lot of alternative packaging. That's historical. I think when you look at that, there was often sort of an adulteration of these wines. Somebody bought them, packaged them in another country and something else,
yep.
Brought down the reputation. So I think it is a historical laws that have come in so they can control the quality. I think that's what it's based on. And it doesn't matter whether you're in France or Italy. That being said, does the same thing exist today? I think everyone has to relook at that. We can have quality wines, but they have to be more open and look at whether it's a lighter weight glass, whether it's alternative packaging, can that quality come out in alternative packaging? And there's already been lots of studies that it can. I think it's very slow to adapt. A lot of consumers are very slow to adapt. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be governments that are going to be the ones that are going to be the heavy and force the change. Whether that government is a big buyer of wine, and we do have lots of governments that are in control of it, and they're the ones that generally will be coming in and mandating recyclable glass, you know, recyclable packaging, or if you want to do a bid and send in your wines, it has to be lighter weight glass. I think our industry is so fragmented, and I don't think we can get people to agree in these different denominations that it's going to have to be intervention, a heavy hand intervention in order to force change. And I think we're coming to that. I think we have to come to that, to be honest with you.
You look at some of the Norwegian monopolies and Canadian monopolies, they're already driving that through.
That's the only way I see it. And I see driving and forcing a whole sense or wholesale change. We have too many tiny producers that are just not going to do it. They're not going to do it on their own.
All right, Michelle. I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chris.